This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 115. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network. I am your host, Riley Bowman, and I'm also joined today by our ever-popular Jacob Paulson.
Popular, huh? Interesting.
You didn't like my choice of words, huh?
I've never been called popular in my life.
Well, you are today, at least for today, so enjoy it while it lasts. Today, folks, is our usual news episode on this Monday, April 24th. Lots going on today in the world and in the news, and this week with the NRA annual meetings coming up. So a lot of great stuff. Some news stories coming to you out of Arizona. Some interesting things with USCCA and the NRA, and let's just call it a little falling out that they're having there. And some great new guns it looks like are going to hit the market and be announced this week at the annual meeting. So stay tuned for all that. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition. Are you looking for high quality, affordable, consistent, and accurate ammunition that is also made in the USA? Check out Sig Sauer's Elite Performance Ammunition, available in FMJ target and self-defense-oriented jacketed hollow point rounds. Whether you are at the range or defending your loved ones, Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition performs consistently between loads of the same bullet weight, ensuring that the results you achieve at the range are the same results that you'll get on the streets. Available at many of your favorite sporting goods stores, online, and especially through our website, concealedcarry.com/SIG ammo. And with that, I'd like to get into our weekly training tip.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this one, at least I couldn't find that we had done this one before, Jacob, so I put it down here, and that is the one-handed rack.
Yeah, one-handed or single-hand manipulation skills are important, and there's a large number of things that we need to be able to do with one hand, and rack slide, probably a good place to start.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this is in the category, obviously, of one-handed manipulation of your weapon. These are all skills, and there's a whole lot of other things we could talk about, too, about one-handed manipulation, but I thought we'd start with this one-handed rack concept, which is assuming that you cannot manipulate your weapon with both hands, you've got to find a way to rack the slide with one hand. And, you know, some of you that have never tried this or even considered this before, you might kind of, I've seen it happen before with students where they're just kind of befuddled, like, how do I do that? And the cool thing is there's actually a lot of really clever ways to rack the slide of your semi-automatic handgun with only one hand. First off, I'll just start with one, I think, one of the easiest ones, I think, and that is if you have like a table or desk or other hard-edged, you know, platform nearby, you can place the rear sight against that and push downward, causing it to rack the slide of the weapon. Now, I guess before I go any further, it should also be explained that one of the things that you'll see oftentimes when we are looking at or reviewing handguns is what types of sights those handguns have. And I always like to at least see on my rear sight some sort of straight face, towards the front. This would be on the rear side of the gun, but on the front facing face of that sight, I want to see kind of a flat surface, because that makes this sort of thing much easier to do. If you got super low profile sights or where they have like a really gradual ramp on them, then they become much more difficult to do the one-handed rack. But where you could start first off, like I said, is finding like a table or a desk or something and rack on that using that rear sight. What are some other options, Jacob?
Well, I think there's a lot of things, you know, speaking specifically of using the front sight, it doesn't have to be a table or desk, could be yourself. But I think, Riley, I've seen you take a knee and use the heel of your shoe, you know, kind of your rear shoe to rack off of the front sight. But I think that the thing that I don't see as often that can be equally as effective is the opposite. Instead of holding the gun and using some object to push against the sight to rack the slide, you can hold the slide and use an object to push against the grip of the gun to rack the slide. Now that's a little bit more complicated because if you're one-handed, you know, then it's like, oh, I have to transition from holding the grip to holding the slide and then back to the grip. That's true, but I have seen people where that's the only way they can do it because it's a easier or larger surface, you know, to kind of push the grip up against something while you're holding the slide versus the contrary.
I've never seen that done before, I'll be honest. Oh,
I've seen it done. I'm not saying it's the best idea or the preferred method of choice.
I would not be done. That. I would not teach that.
I didn't say I taught it either. Well, what I said is I've seen people who's claim that's the only way they can do it because of the nature of how small it is or how difficult it might be to catch the front sight on something. Well, it's like, well, now, okay, well, then if I just there, transition the grip.
You say front sight or rear sight?
Well, either really, right?
Use the rear sight. Use the rear sight would be my suggestion.
That would be fine. I'll give you an example. I have a buddy. I haven't seen him in a long time, but I think we're buddies. He lives in Texas, and he has no sights on his gun. In fact, he's like morally opposed to sights. And yes, well, like I said, to each their own. He's morally opposed to sights, and so his gun is machined completely smooth all across the top. So if he goes to rack that slide, you know, one-handed like that, that's challenging. So he will rotate his hand to the slide and then push up against something against the back of the gun, the rear, the grip of the gun, and then he'll transition back to the grip. Yeah, I'm serious.
Can't believe you're actually telling me this.
I have seen it done.
First of all, why would you have a gun? Why would you be morally opposed to no sights? And
yeah, that's his thing.
And force you to have to, like... Oh man, I'm blowing a gasket at this, Jacob, thinking about how do I, you know, I'm gripping the gun like this, you know, normally, and then I got to rotate over without dropping the stupid sucker and without juggling it and catching the trigger and blowing myself in the groin. You know, no. Forget,
doesn't sound like a good
last,
idea.
You know, 2 minutes that Jacob was talking here. But
I'm going to ask him to record it on video and send it to us so we can see it.
Okay. Do that. I am intrigued, if not completely appalled, but I am intrigued. So here's some other things too, though. By the way, so you can lift up your foot and catch your heel with that. You can use your holster so a lot of times, especially if it's an OWB holster. It becomes very easy and prudent to use the holster just to reach down there by your waist, catch the rear sight, and rack it that way. But honestly, though, if you use enough tension, if you just push the gun against your leg and you, as long assuming you've got pants or whatever, I don't know, I'd want to do this on bare skin, but it would work then too. It just wouldn't be as comfortable for you. But if you push with enough force against your leg with the top of the slide of the gun and then just push, and especially if you do it with a lot of force and, you know, quickly, like with great deal of prejudice would be one way I would describe it. You can really do this. In fact, I think you could do this even if you don't have that great of sights, or if you don't really have any sights on the top of your gun. I think if you use enough force and you just reach down, push, and, you know, force it downward really quickly, I think you can rack the slide on just about any gun. So I've tried a lot of different guns and I've had success just reaching down, hitting the leg, you know, and racking it really quickly. So there you go.
Have you ever seen someone pin it between their knees to rack it?
Oh, right. Yeah, I have seen that, actually.
Yeah, that one makes me a little uncomfortable, but I have seen that done. And I've seen it done in two different ways, one of which is far more safe than the other. I've seen some people who will take the firearm, they'll almost like just stick the gun, you know, the grip of the gun between the knees, and then they'll try and pull the slide back. And then I've also seen someone try and grip the slide with their knees while holding the gun and then rack the slide.
Sure.
So that, you know, here's, I think, the main takeaway, like all things guns and concealed carry, like make a list of the potential techniques, identify which is probably preferable and most safe and efficient and tactical, and try that. And if you can get it to work for you, great. If you can't get it to work for you, move down the list, you know, like the key is to find something that works for you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, find a technique that works. I like to be familiar with a couple different techniques so I can try it or do it a couple different ways depending on the situation. But the important thing is that you know how to do this technique and do it quickly, because chances are if you are forced to use one-handed manipulation techniques, it's because you've already been wounded, which means you may very well still have a very much active threat. So this is something that needs to be fixed. You know, meaning that you have to rack the slide apparently because you've got to fix something. So you've got to be able to do that super fast. Get proficient, be safe, but learn how to do it so that you can save your life.
I'll add to that, that a lot of times when we talk about single hand manipulation, that kind of the scenario that comes to mind is injured, right? Like my other arm is out of commission because it's injured. Your other arm can be out of commission for other reasons. Maybe I'm holding back someone, a child or somebody who's frantic and, really needs to be held back. So, don't forget there are many reasons why that arm might not be available.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that as well. That is certainly true. So good catch on that one. There are other reasons why you might need to use one-handed techniques. So there you go. A training tip for today and perhaps
a what not to do.
A controversial one, as we had a little bit of a spat here about techniques that I would never want to see. If I saw that in one of my classes, I'd be like, you're done. You're out. Bye.
I've never tried it, but I'll never forget it. I can tell you that I will never forget it.
Okay. Well, on to today's episode is also brought to you by Guardian Nation and Sports of Field. I wanted to let you all know that. And today I am enjoying, by the way, a Rocky Mountain root beer. One of Jacob's faves.
Yeah, they do make a good root beer.
It's all right. I'm enjoying it, though. Okay, so, hey, one thing, too, just a quick follow-up, if you don't mind. Last week, we spent some time talking about kind of the direction of this podcast, and we've made some changes. We've done a few different things, brought on some new people, and we've received some surprisingly negative feedback on some of that, but overwhelmingly, we've received a lot of positive feedback, and I wanted to let you all know that we appreciate you. We appreciate the feedback that we've received, and we do take it all seriously. So anyway, just kind of a quick follow-up to that discussion that we had last week, and we're looking forward to the future and hoping to do some great things here with the podcast. So here we are today, episode 115. It just never ceases to amaze me, Jacob. It's like 115 episodes. Like, how have we done 115 episodes? It doesn't even seem possible.
You've been on all of them, so you would know better. Thank you so much again. I wanted to say it as well, for all the emails over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, all the Facebook messages, all of the outstanding, just thoughts. And I'll say, a lot of you had some good feedback, some good ideas. But all around, too, there's just a lot of reassurance that, a large number of you are very happy with what we're doing and continue to get a lot of value out of it. And so to that end, I appreciate it. Though I do have an interesting review to read, Riley, that you haven't seen yet.
Is it the one? Okay.
This is on Podbeam.
Oh, yeah. I have not seen that yet.
No, this is hilarious. So whoever wrote this review, if you are listening to this, I got to tell you, this podcast ain't for you. You should just unsubscribe and go elsewhere. The person says, you guys need to pull your heads out of your ain't. At the end of the show, you seem to have the side of the criminals saying there is no need to shoot the criminal. Total beep, beep. Criminals need to die or they will just keep doing it. Look at the percentage of repeat offenders, .. Enough said.
I don't even know what he's talking about.
I don't know either. But the point, here would be my point. So, yeah, me and Riley don't think that all people deserve to die, nor do we think that all criminals deserve to die. We do not consider ourselves to be judges and executioners and don't think that that's our role here on Earth or in society. So if for those of you who feel that we're too soft and we should just, all criminals should die and be killed and heaven forbid they have to go to jail, you're listening to the wrong podcast.
I certainly have zero warm and fuzzy feelings for criminals.
Sure.
I don't, but
They die in the process of me stopping a threat that happened, I'm good for, I'm okay with
that's
that.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we have to approach this reasonably and within the bounds of the law. And we talk about this all the time. And the important thing to understand, and I know there's people that do not understand this concept at all, and they're going to find themselves in trouble at some point if they, have to use deadly force because they don't have the right perspective. And the perspective is that we are allowed to use deadly force to stop a threat. to life typically. So that's the key. You know, it's like, hey, if they die, fine. If they don't, great. You know, but the important part is that I live to see another day. My family lives to see another day. I responded responsibly and within the bounds of the law to a situation that, regardless of how it ended up, I stopped the threat. That's the important part. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll move on from that review.
Yep.
So first up in our news stories today, Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, he approved a measure Tuesday that would block state or local laws requiring guns to use electronic firearms tracking. Where does this even come from, Jacob?
I honestly have no idea where this comes from. I mean, it's frankly confusing, especially coming out of Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, it sounds like, and there has been some proposed laws where, you know, whether it be manufacturers or whatever, where there might be some sort of requirement requiring RFID technology or GPS tracking technology. And it kind of has some relevance in Arizona, where there has been quite a bit of, you know, weapons trafficking across the border into Mexico. And so certainly there are proponents of laws like this saying, hey, we should be tracking these weapons. All weapons that are sold should, you know, have a tracking device of some sort in them, and then we can see where they end up. I know that's making a lot of gun owners very nervous, but the fact is that Governor Ducey said, yeah, ain't gonna fly. So he said that, you know, so he signed a measure that blocking laws that might require any sort of electronic firearms tracking.
Yeah, it's a preventative measure against potential future stuff, right? And that's the way to think of this one. Is Arizona's governor, he's not the one who proposed the law, as far as I know, he just signed it, right? So the Arizona, you know, legislative body essentially has said, hey, one day people might be into this thing, and we're just going to pass a law now that says not in Arizona.
Yep. So that's pretty cool. You know, good for Governor Ducey and the state of Arizona. And yeah. All right. Moving on to the firearm blog reported. This is kind of an interesting one. I really quite enjoyed this article. And it's titled 10 Most Expensive Firearms Sold in James D. Julia April 2017 Auction. And so for those that don't know, the James D. Julia auction is one of the it's an auction where oftentimes you see some of the most rare, unique, you know, just amazing firearms that are put up for auction. In the past have been some amazing, you know, guns that have been sold sometimes to the tune of, I think there was one once, it was like $1 million or more, or a couple of million or something. It was ridiculous. This year, there were firearms sold that were worth a total of $16 million over the course of the 3-day auction. That's amazing. And some of the firearms featured here stood out to me, this very first one, which is actually the cheapest one on the list out of these top 10, is a 1911 A1 pistol, Singer model. And so what makes this so unique is that it was manufactured by the Singer Manufacturing Company, same company that made sewing machines way back when. And so that's, you know, this is just going back to our history of when during wartime, you know, as a nation, we really collaborated as a nation, taking, you know, and using resources from all sorts of, you know, backgrounds. And I mean, sewing machine manufacturers making guns, that's pretty cool.
Yeah I thought the number one gun on here was kind of cool. So this gun went for $460,000, and it's a Colt SAA revolver, and it looks pretty beat up. But what makes it special or unique is that it is proven to have been used by one of George Armstrong Custer's men during the Battle of Little Bighorn, and apparently it's the only documented revolver known today that was used during that battle.
Yeah, that one is pretty dang amazing. That's incredible, frankly. I'd love to have that myself, but I'll never be able to afford that. But then there was also two rifles that were back-to-back, as far as one was sold at $149,000, the other one was sold at $195,000, and both of them were FG-42 automatic rifles. Pretty interesting stuff, you know, that you can find here at the James D. Julia auction. You know, a lot of really great classic, you know, old model Winchester lever action rifles. You always see a few of those pop up, and those are always fun to see. So good old American history, in support of the Second Amendment. Moving on now to New York, where a Southwest Airlines co-pilot is in trouble after he got caught at security in Albany at the Albany International Airport with a loaded handgun in the pilot's carry-on bag. And so this was a New Orleans resident, Eric Gibson, age 55, who was charged with a misdemeanor criminal possession of a weapon after a TSA officer who was running the X-ray machine. He spotted the 380 caliber handgun in the pilot's bag. The gun was loaded with six rounds. And so somehow his bag wasn't screened before his flight from New Orleans to Albany the previous night. But as he was trying to leave and fly out of Albany, he got caught. There's a way you can do this legally, Mr. Gibson.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because there is the federal... Oh, shoot, I'm having a brain fart all of a sudden. That program where pilots can, they go through some training. It's basically similar training to a federal air marshal. It's a special course, and then they're able to actually carry as a pilot.
Personal gun. Yeah.
I can't remember what that was called, but anyway.
I can never remember.
Yeah, I have friends that are pilots that are, able to carry their guns onto the plane. But anyway, that's the way it
wasn't clear to me, but my sense was from reading this on a couple different publications that he was not... flying on this particular flight, that maybe I was wrong, but the way I read it, it seemed to me like he was just hitching a ride.
I thought he was a pilot, but I don't know. What do I know? We know he is a pilot for Southwest regardless, yeah. Right. And that maybe actually that could be, maybe he was trying to just, transfer from one airport to another as a passenger in the cabin. And that is, that would not go so well because those pilots are able to have their guns on them with the proper training and licenses in the cockpit, which is secured from the rest of the plane.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, maybe I'm wrong. So
who knows?
Not fully relevant, but there you have it.
Yeah. Well, turning our attention now to Fresno, California, this happened last week, actually not too long after we recorded last week's news episode of the podcast. And it's unfortunate, but, this is the reality of the world we live in now. And this is where the Fresno gunman killed three people at a Catholic charity. And this gunman has been identified as 39-year-old Corey Ali Muhammad. Went by the nickname Black Jesus. He yelled Allahu Akbar as he was being detained by officers. Of course, people will say, well, this wasn't terrorism, but sure looks that way, doesn't it?
Well, what's clear is that he individually may have terroristic intent, and so does that make it terrorism? I suppose how you define it. I would say that it does, whether some large international organization or group was behind it or influential or not, isn't required for something to be called terrorism.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel as well. But clearly the motivations were not, it doesn't appear to me that this was random, it's a Catholic charity, first of all, where this takes place at. He is a self-proclaimed, Muslim. And I hate to get off into the weeds on anything here, but it just seems that the intentions here were not, it's not a random thing. It was very much more of a targeted sort of thing, specifically, someone with certain religious views going after someone else for their religious views. And this can happen between all sorts of religions, but certainly this is something that we do see that has happened before in our country and will continue to happen.
Well, he told police that he hates white people.
Yeah. I mean, there you go. I mean, it's a hate crime for crying out loud.
Yeah. That we could take.
Our hearts go out to those that were affected by the shooting. And fortunately, he was captured without too many more people getting injured. And, there you go. It's just another reminder, a daily reminder as to why we need to be prepared ourselves, because these sorts of situations do arise, and they arise when you least expect it a lot of times. There was another interesting shooting that took place in Cleveland, actually started on Sunday of last week. Many of you probably followed this in the news, where Steve Stevens was, he became, I guess, famous because he recorded himself with video while he basically executed an elderly man. And the good news is a few days later, he was captured. He was basically pinned down, and he committed suicide in that process. So that has come to an end. And it doesn't appear that his claims of having killed dozens of other people had any sort of merit to him at all. And that's fortunate, at least. But, once again, I mean, it appears that he completely randomly targeted this old man on the street. And yeah. I just see this as, another daily reminder of, let's be prepared out there. You never know, when these sorts of things are going to happen.
Yeah, random is the word here. I mean, it doesn't get much more random than that.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been anybody that he selected. And for whatever reason, this happened to be this dude, and 74-year-old Robert Godwin Jr. So our hearts and prayers go out to his family and those affected by that. But we're just thankful that Mr. Stevens was, that he's no longer going to be a threat to anybody. An end to his life has taken place. And so be prepared out there. So now on to, this is, I think, one of the more interesting stories for our podcast today, Jacob, and that is where it was just reported today that the USCCA, that is the United States Concealed Carry Association, was uninvited to the NRA annual meetings. Wow. Where'd that come from?
Well, it's getting more clear all the time where it came from.
Yeah, because literally, like, as we are recording this, it's news stories are coming in that the NRA is releasing or introducing. In fact, there's a live website now. It's available now, apparently, called the NRA Carry Guard Program, which directly competes with a lot of what USCCA has to offer. It's being billed as training, education, and insurance.
Yeah, from what I can tell, Carry Guard is, it's kind of awkward because the NRA already has an instructor program with specific course curriculum, right? And so now this appears to be almost like a duplicate. Carry Guard is, instead of, just general firearm training, this is specifically concealed carry training with specific certified instructors. And being an NRA certified instructor does not appear in any way to have any correlation. You have to go get unique and separate, standalone certification to be a carry guard instructor. And then obviously I'm assuming there'll be some class curriculum that goes along with that. Aside from the training aspect though, and this is perhaps where the USCCA conflict is more direct, they are launching a product, an insurance product, and it is pretty darn a spitting image for a USCCA type model. Three different levels, a silver, a gold, and a platinum kind of thing. And it includes financial reimbursements for legal related expenses should you be involved in some sort of firearm related legal incident, and should the case end up with you being considered innocent, etc. So it's a reimbursement style product, and it also has some civil damages, has a potential, it's not clear how it works, but there's some sort of reimbursement or other sorts of financial related benefits for things like bail, finding attorneys, expert witnesses, things like that. So definitely, what's clear here is that the NRA has launched a competing product to USCCA's product, and that they're going more directly into the concealed carry training avenue, and that also conflicts to some degree with USCCA. I mean, it conflicts with a lot of organizations, frankly, but to me, I think that the main conflict here is related to the insurance product.
Yeah, that's the big revenue generator for sure for USCCA, and then I suspect it would be much the same for NRA as well. I'm curious to get a little more detail as to the actual training curriculum and the courses that are available, where they're available, who's teaching them, that sort of thing. I'm curious to see where this is going to lead. And there is a link, like you said, there is a place where you can go if you are already an NRA instructor, if you are a law enforcement officer, if you're, I think, military personnel, some sort, I think it said somewhere in there too. But anyway, there's a, there's a website you can go to and apply to become a carry guard instructor as part of this program. So anyway, interesting to see, but definitely came as a shock, I think, to many people in the industry. And the USCCA really kind of raised, you know, the alarm, if you will, saying, hey, we just got uninvited. What the heck, you know? I think it was just a couple weeks ago that the USCCA and NRA had a meeting together. I don't have any details as to what was actually discussed in that meeting, but it, you know, didn't seem like this was coming anytime soon. So pretty interesting to see, especially, you know, here with this week, the NRA annual meetings beginning later this week in Atlanta, Georgia. And USCCA obviously thought they were going to have a booth there pushing their own products. And instead, the NRA is going to have a cadre of people pushing this new carry guard program to attendees at the NRA annual meetings. So,
yep. We will see.
I'm looking forward to seeing some of those people there. That'll be interesting. Now, on to some pretty cool news, I think, with the firearms industry. We got two new guns that we're going to talk about in this podcast today that have been announced. One of them's not as specific as the other, but also I should point out that these are actually not the only things that we know are coming. Remington, I know, and we've talked about, I think, in past episodes, they are going to be showing off their new RP9 pistol. There's a couple other companies out there, you know, coming out with some new guns and things. So that's all exciting. I plan to see Hudson. Many of the listeners of the podcast are familiar with Hudson. We did a podcast episode with them. We did a Guardian Nation live broadcast with them. The new Hudson H9 that has been really quite an eye-opener for a lot of folks in the industry. People have been wanting to know, when is that going to be shipping? And I'm told by Cy and Lauren over there at Hudson that they are going to be announcing at the NRA annual meetings that, you know, what the actual ship date is on their new new pistols. So that's pretty cool. We'll be there to catch that news immediately. In fact, they're my first stop on Friday when the show floor opens up. So we'll be reporting just as soon as we know when those guns are going to be shipping. But anyway, here's a new one from H&K, and they are introducing a subcompact model of their ever-popular, it's really gained a lot of steam in the recent year or so, the VP9, and they have a subcompact model coming out. So that's pretty cool to see. What do you think, Jacob?
You know, the picture looks really nice. I think H&K is a reputable manufacturer. It makes sense to have a subcompact 9 in the industry. I mean, everyone should, right? I mean, it's clearly they see what's selling. And, you know, this is a fun time of year. Usually, you know, January you have SHOT Show, and then right now you have the NRA annual meetings. So these seem to be kind of the times when you see a lot of these announcements. And, you know, the short answer is, like, when can we shoot it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be asking that question for sure of them. So I'll stop by and we'll see if we can get our hands on it anytime soon. Next up, this is kind of an interesting one. And frankly, I'm very intrigued. And I know that's their intent. But Springfield Armory says that they are going to have a new pistol announcing at the NRA annual meetings. And they released a teaser video along with this showing this pistol being run through its paces, doing some drills and some, you know, different you know, shooting out of a vehicle, I know, was one of the kind of like little clips that was from this video. And so they, you know, kind of hyping it all up, but all through this video, they have blurred out the actual pistol.
Yeah. So, yeah. Who knows what it looks like? Yeah.
You have to show up at the show if you want to see what it is that's actually coming, but there's quite a bit of hype around it in a very short, order, it seems, as that video from when I first saw it this morning to just a little while ago had grown in hundreds or thousands of views very quickly. People are wondering, hey, is this going to be finally a pistol that does away with the grip safety? Because as you know, I think every pistol that Springfield Armory makes has a grip safety, whether it's their 1911s, which are great pistols, by the way, or the XD line of pistols, whether it's the XDM, XD, XDSs, those all have grip safeties. And there's people that don't like those grip safeties. I personally don't have a problem with them, but there's people are speculating that, hey, maybe this isn't going to have grip safety. I wrote an article about it, you know, kind of talking about it somewhat, and I'm ready to come out with one big prediction, and I think it's going to be a gun that's actually made in the U.S. of A. Because all the other pistols, other than their 1911s, are made in Croatia. And they're great. You know, the XD line of pistols, they're great guns. I like them. I shoot competitively with an XD M9. But, you know, people also knock on them. Well, those are Croatian and not American. I kind of wonder if they're going to say, hey, we're going to come out with a striker-fired gun that's made in America.
That would be interesting. Yeah, I mean, you see like Taurus, you know, who came out with an American-made gun. A lot of companies are trying to, you know, play up on that. And good, like that's great. Like, let's make them there. As to the grip safety, yeah, I mean, they didn't say anything that would give any sort of inclination. It's more of people just thinking, well, what would be different for them? You know, oh, that would be different. You know, so who knows at this point? But you know, odds are very strong that this is going to be a gun that's oriented towards self-defense, concealed carry use, because that's what's hot.
Yeah. And in the article, this was one thing that I kind of stumbled on as I was watching this video very closely. There's seems to be almost like an Easter egg. Right at the very end of this teaser video, there's just like this quick, you know, little, it's really just a single frame almost of this gun being fired as the, you know, outro of the video is starting to wrap up, you know, and it was like, whoa. And I managed to freeze the frame and take a screenshot. And it does look like it's something different than the XD series of guns. It's got kind of a slant to the rear of the slide. It looks fairly compact because you see it in the grip of this of the shooter, and his left thumb is fairly close to the, you know, end of the muzzle. So it looks like it's probably, like you said, Jacob, defensive oriented, you know, somewhat compact. I kind of wonder if it's going to be like a mid-size single stack, you know, 9mm. Who knows? We'll see. We'll find out Friday at the NRA annual meetings. And as soon as I got the info, I will try to get that information out and get it reported on. But if you'd like to see the little sneak peek of what I think might be this pistol, go check out the article on our website at concealedcarry.com. All right. Now to our first justified story. Jacob, I'm going to hand this one off to you first.
Yes, this is this is an interesting one. Title is Lawton. I think that's how you say the city. What do you think?
Yeah.
That's in Oklahoma. Some city in Lawton in Oklahoma. Essentially, you have a man who is trying to break into a woman's home. It's about 8:30 in the morning, okay? And what you have is Rocky Stamper, apparently, is the home invasion guy, the intruder. And you know, he's trying to break in. And a lot of the neighbors describe the sound as fireworks. That's the kind of thing we always hear. It's very, very loud, right? So who's to say exactly what happened? But the homeowner, and we don't know the name of the homeowner, she doesn't want to be identified, but they did say it was a woman's home. She fired. She shot.
Yeah. Well, and the thing I thought was interesting about this story, Jacob, was that some of the kind of bystanders or witnesses to this situation, and it does appear that it occurred, you know, it was daylight. It was 8:30 in the morning. So sun is up. It's, you know, it makes me wonder if this burglar is thinking, okay, it's past 8:00, you know, this homeowner has perhaps left for work. Now's the prime opportunity to break in there. But clearly somebody was still home. And some of the neighbors in the area, one of them in particular, older guy, if you watch the video of this story, he's describing how he was outside with some other construction workers and a bullet whizzed by them. So it's like, whoo, you know, I mean, it's just that little reminder, I think, for us as self-defense minded people. I mean, we think so often in terms of, oh, my house is being broke into. I have a potential threat here. I need to eliminate said threat. And you're so focused on that threat, but don't remember or keep in mind that if you miss that threat, or even if your bullet passes through that threat, that, you know, you could hurt somebody else that, you know, is essentially an innocent bystander. And they said this bullet came within feet of where they were standing or sitting or whatever. So that's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's really an awful news story where, well, I shouldn't say awful. It's clear that the journalist here was not able to get really any details at all about what happened. So the entire news story just really consists of these neighbor accounts of hearing noise and seeing things whiz past them. But what's clear is that this poor dude picked the wrong home and he's dead.
Yeah, yeah. You're so right in that, though. These are my favorite stories, not, you know, where it's like, here's what happened. And it's like, they describe what happened in about two sentences, which is really nothing at all. And then just all this other filler.
Yeah, so, yeah. The next one's more interesting.
Well, actually, so I changed up the order of the stories here. So the next one, well, unless you were referring to this one, the Massachusetts one. I think it was interesting because it was in Massachusetts, but Worcester police said that a burglary suspect and the resident of a home were hit with gunfire during an attempted home invasion. So yet here another home invasion similar to this Lawton, Oklahoma one, but this one took place not during the broad daylight. Instead, it took place at 10 p.m. on Saturday. And officers arrived at the scene of this home upon a report of an attempted home invasion. Near the side entrance of the home, they found a semi-conscious man suffering from a gunshot wound to his lower extremity. A man and woman inside the home told police that the man had approached the side door of the home, demanding entrance and threatening a man and woman inside with his gun.
Despite making those threats, apparently he was not able to get in. The male homeowner, you know, exchanges gunfire, you know, essentially, who knows who shot first, right? That's not clear right. Who shot first. But what's clear is that they both shot, their guns at each other and both were hit. The male resident, 24 years old, and the burglar.
Yeah. And the story seems to indicate that the resident may have received the worse of the two wounds or two. Yeah, whatever. So, because it says that he is suffering from a serious gunshot wound, and whereas it simply said that the attempted burglar was suffering from a wound to his lower extremity, but not necessarily any, indicator.
Semi-conscious man.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, so, this could be another one of those examples where the good guy, fails and wins at the same time. I mean, is it a win if you prevent the BG, the bad guy or bad gal, from coming into the home and harming your family and who knows doing what, shooting you with what gun? Yeah, it's absolutely a win. Unfortunately, in this case, it required a sacrifice, whether by nature of the incident or because the guy's skills weren't up to par, we don't know. But the homeowner also took a shot.
Yeah, I think that's all, that's the reality of it though, right? We do see a lot of stories and we share a lot of stories where a homeowner or someone, uses their weapon and successfully without themselves getting hurt. But the reality is quite often in self-defense stories, people do get hurt on both sides. I think a lesson to take away from that is that we need to always, have that warrior mentality of that I'm not going to give up regardless of what happens, even if I get stabbed, even if I get slashed, even if I get shot, as long as I can keep breathing, as long as I can keep, pushing forward, that's what you got to do. You got to survive and make it to the end. If you can make it to the end of that fight and you're still alive and you're still breathing and emergency personnel arrive on the scene, you have a good chance of surviving. But if you give up before that point, you don't have really any chance.
Yeah. Yeah, we always got to remember the primary objective is survival on our own and survival of our loved ones, right? So
yeah,
whatever, sacrifice might be necessary to make it worth it. But we train and we work hard to increase our odds of not having to have, really sad sacrifices.
Absolutely. So on to our final justified story this week out of Dallas, Texas. That's not meant to be a laugh, by the way. I'm kind of flabbergasted, Jacob, because I think it was just last week where we shared the story where the father had to kill his own son, mentally unstable son. He was under the influence of some drugs. He shot his dad like 5 times, and the dad was able to return fire, and he killed his son. But it was completely, it was justified. It was in self-defense. He was cleared in the shooting. It's really unfortunate. But now we turn to Fort Worth, actually, where a father had to shoot his adult son who was trying to run over him with a car. Officers were called about 11 a.m. In Fort Worth, where a 28-year-old man attempted to run over his father after an argument. The man then shot his son in self-defense. If there's a good, well, other than the father surviving the situation, it's a pretty terrifying situation. The son does not appear to have been killed in this situation. So, I'd like to think, Jacob, that, father and son could work things out. and put this behind them.
You shot me. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is a rough one. I always find it interesting. On a rare occasion, we get one of these stories where I shot to prevent someone from running me over in a car. And those are always interesting to me because in my mind, I think, okay, what's my response time to get my gun out and fire a shot? Like from concealed, like Riley, what's your best response time that you've ever clocked?
From concealment?
Yeah.
Probably around 1 second.
Okay. That's pretty good. I mean, I don't know if I could do 1 second. I suspect you're faster than me. It's why I asked you what your time was. I suspect for me, like, you know, on a range, driving as hard as I could. Like, I think I could do 1.5 pretty well. In a real life situation, who's to say? You know, maybe it's 2 seconds, maybe it's less. But how long does it take to just get out of the way? Maybe about the same, maybe a little longer. I mean, it's hard to say, but I suspect that for a large number of American citizens, you could just move faster than you can draw and shoot. And I'm not trying to pass judgment here. Like, there's no judgment. I'm merely kind of taking a tangent here and just kind of broadly talking about the concept of I'm about to get run over by someone, so I draw and shoot them. The other challenge I have, you know, strategically or tactically, is that firing a gun at a driver of a car does not ensure that I won't get run over. Right, disabling the driver does not immediately guarantee that the brakes will get slammed or that they'll move the steering wheel and go some other direction and I'll be just fine. So just, I don't know, my 2 cents, every time one of these kinds of stories pops up, I think in my head, I think you're better off just getting out of the way if you can.
Yeah, you know, use of deadly force on a driver of a moving vehicle is always a controversial, you know, issue. I wouldn't say that I would never rule it out as a possibility, as something that, you know, sure, occasionally needs to be done. But there's definitely a lot of things that got to be taken into account. I mean, you already touched on a few potential issues with that sort of situation. But here's another one. You know, let's suppose you actually do land lethal hits on the driver of a vehicle that's trying to harm you or someone else. And now they are disabled from being able to operate the vehicle, and it continues onward on some path and accidentally, you know, I mean, like after the fact, strikes someone or something that, you know, you never intended. And the fact is a lot of that sort of, you know, that those sorts of situations are a lot of times out of your control. I would say it's a very rare situation where you need to use deadly force to shoot at, to try to stop a driver of a vehicle, but it sometimes does happen. And at least in this situation, that's what this man felt like he needed to do. He was questioned by police and released. It does not appear that there is any sort of pending case against the father. Seems to be a justified situation where, you know, he used force to save potentially his life from his son who was trying to kill him with a car. I really hope that son gets help. That's a pretty rough situation to be in there. Now, how about this story? I threw this in here as a bonus, Jacob, and I don't know that you've seen it, but this is kind of close to home here, and I thought it was
another father-son story.
Exactly. I thought it was really relevant based on the topic. It's unfortunate, you know, we aren't too far away from Father's Day, but anyhow, a mayor of Colorado town arrested after pointing handgun at his teenage son while drunk, authorities say. And this occurred back on April 15th, where the mayor, Lawrence Arthur Perrault, I think his name is, he's facing a number of charges, including felony charges, where he was in a drunken stupor, we'll call it, and he pointed a handgun at his 18-year-old son after a family trip to see a movie, ironically enough, in Aurora, which is, of course, near where the Aurora Theater shooting occurred. This father, apparently he began drinking. His son had a disagreement with him, apparently over some of the number of drinks that the father had had. And as they were driving home, the son insisted that he drive home, which I think was probably very wise of him. But they continued to argue. The son or the father pulled out a gun, pointed at his son. He's being charged, of course, besides with felony menacing and harassment and all that, but he was also carrying his concealed weapon unlawfully as his concealed handgun permit expired nearly 4 years ago. So, yeah, not looking so hot for the mayor of Kiowa, Colorado here.
Yeah, not at all. You know, so the, I mean, the father and son thing, it's not the relevant piece here. The relevant piece is the substance abuse. Yep. And we talk about this in most of our classes. This comes up on occasion. You know, you just, you got to draw a very hard line in the sand between, you know, any sort of consumption of alcohol and direct access to a gun. The two just can't ever be in the same place at the same time. It just doesn't work. And it's not an issue of biology. It's not an issue of what you can sustain or handle. And maybe we could do a separate podcast on this sometime, but it's just unacceptable. And in this case, this poor dude, you know, his career, his reputation, everything's gone. You know, it's over. And frankly, thank goodness, that's the worst of it.
Right, right. The fortunate thing here is no one was hurt physically as a result of this situation. And I will just reiterate what you already touched on, Jacob, that guns and alcohol and other drugs, including legal ones, just simply do not mix. It is never a good idea. It is a recipe for disaster at times. And many situations where... I mean, I think we just had a situation a couple months ago out west. I think I want to say near Grand Junction, where a minor was shot and killed by a drunken man. You know, it was an accident sort of thing. And so, you know, this kind of stuff happens, and you know, really hope and encourage our listeners to be responsible. It's not just about being responsible with drinking and driving, but drinking and guns. You just, it doesn't mix. You know, make sure that that you are the responsible one in those you know, with those sorts of things. So, anyway, that wraps up our stories for this episode of the podcast here today. We really appreciate you all tuning in to the Concealed Carry Podcast. We appreciate your support. In fact, I wanted to share another review that we had of the podcast, and one which I agree with in a lot of respects, because well, it starts right off with his title, and his title says, "Can't Please Everyone." And that is oh so true, isn't it, Jacob?
I suppose so.
And this review is left by Git, G-H-I-T. That's a good one. This podcast is great. I'm a South Florida CCWer living in an quote-unquote urban environment. This podcast is very informative, and I recommend it to anyone and everyone, CCWer or not. This podcast motivates me to learn more and more on safety, tactics and procedures, or different training techniques. Thanks, guys. And we thank you, Git, for listening to the podcast and for your review. Just as a reminder, if you really enjoy the podcast, we'd love to get a review from you on iTunes, which is unfortunately one of the few places you can leave a written review. So far, we've got over 100 of you that have chosen to do that, and we appreciate you taking the time to do so. And with that, I think. Oh, we do have one. I almost forgot, Jacob. We mentioned earlier on, we have two other sponsors. We got to give them credit for making it possible to do this episode here today. And the first one is Guardian Nation, which is looking for more training and better gear. Join Guardian Nation to be part of the fastest growing tribe of self-defense shooters nationwide. Members receive access to the concealedcarry.com shooter skill library, Guardian Nation live broadcasts and past recordings, as well as 10% off everything sold at concealedcarry.com. Also, members receive a box of shooting gear 4 times a year, which is worth at least the value of the membership alone. Join now and get your dues returned to you in gear every 3 months. Learn more and get started at guardiannation.com. And also, for a limited time, get our American Gun Law course at 90% off just for signing up for or being a member of Guardian Nation. And also, today's episode is brought to you by Sports Afield, which, after listening to these justified stories today on the podcast, have you ever considered how you would access your gun quickly in a home invasion while still keeping your firearms stored securely? The Sports Afield line of quick-access handgun safes are perfect for the task. They are foam-lined, yet built with heavy-duty 16-gauge steel that will keep your firearms protected and still allow you to quickly access them in an emergency with the reliable, custom-programmable 4-button keypad. A line of full-size rifle safes are also now available, and that... where shipping and delivery is oh so easy. Trust this 100-year-old brand, yes, the same company that has published the Sports Afield magazine since 1887, with your firearm storage and security needs. See the full lineup at concealedcarry.com/sportsafield, and for a limited time, save 10% with the coupon code podcast10.
You know, so, Riley, do you get the Sports Afield magazine?
I do not currently. I have had it in the past.
So something cool, just for listeners, I don't think this is part of the official, you know, sponsor message or whatever, but anytime you buy any Sports Afield safe, you also get the Sports Afield magazine subscription. It's not inherent. You don't just, the magazine won't just start showing up, but inside of the packaging of the safe is a voucher for a free subscription to the magazine. So it's kind of cool.
Is that now, is that with the full size safes or the...
All safes.
Including the little pistol vaults.
Yep.
Well, how come I haven't got one of those vouchers?
I don't know. Got to ask, I guess.
Yeah.
I got one right here for you. How about that?
Cool. And no, that's fantastic. I didn't even realize that. So very cool. I probably opened up a Sports Afield safe box and never noticed the voucher in there. So that would be like a little like tip to some of you. If you've purchased the Sports Afield safe, look for that little voucher. I do enjoy the Sports Afield publication. Like I said, I'm not currently a subscriber. Sorry. But, you know, I can only subscribe to so many magazines at a time. And right now I'm already at my limit. Anywho, we hope to see you this week, later this week on the Wednesday episode. And so stay tuned for some more great content from us. By the way, at the end of this week, I'll be in Atlanta, Georgia. So sorry Jacob couldn't come and join me, but I'll be down there together with a writer from our team here at concealedcarry.com. We'll be looking at some of the great new products being announced at the NRA annual meetings, meeting with some of our, you know, folks that we've done business with before, and also looking for opportunities for new video content. So stay tuned. You should see some things that hits our YouTube channel in coming, you know, days and weeks from the NRA annual meetings, plus some written articles. So looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun. With that, we're going to sign off and see you all later this week. Jacob, any last words?
Nope.
Very well then. So with that, folks, take care, train hard, be safe. We'll see you next time.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. The Concealed Carry Podcast, Concealed Carry Inc., ConcealedCarry.com, and their affiliates strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in this podcast.